You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster film in the last decade, then chances are that it's been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. In Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, investigative reporter Tiffany Meyer reveals how the CCP has infiltrated major studios. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
America, land that I love, stand beside her and guide her through the night with the light from above, from the mountains to the prairies to the oceans, wide with foam.
Time we would cheer for such a song in America. Hey, welcome to Monday on the Morning Show with Preston Scott. We are back at it again. Show number 4435, day 67 of America Held Hostage. Grant Allen over there, Studio 1A. I'm here in Studio 1B. It's Monday, March 29th. Yeah, it's a little painful. Rough weekend. FSU baseball takes it on the schneid. Basketball gets, as Grant Allen put it in the local news segment, bounced from the NCAA basketball tournament. Did not play well. Just did not. And, it's so funny. They just were so hesitant. By the time they decided to start shooting, and they got within five in the second half, and I thought, okay, here we go. They just, I will say they... They got a little outcoached. They did not adjust their defensive package, and they kept switching their big out on top of the lane. And Michigan's inside game was just too good for that kind of defensive philosophy. They needed to keep their big on their big and switch the other four. And just do something different on the picks. Make them shoot it outside, which they never did. They never had to. So, a good year for FSU basketball. They will be better next year, with or without Scotty Barnes. Honestly, he needs to stay. He's not mature enough for the NBA yet. But we'll see. Anyway, it's just basketball. Our verse of the day kind of helps us focus on the importance of the week. It's Holy Week. To a Christian, this is like any other week. You're supposed to try your best to live it. But the focus shifts a little bit. John 12, verse 12. The next day, the large crowd that had come to the feast heard that Jesus was coming to Jerusalem. So they took branches of palm trees and went out to meet him, crying out, "Hosanna, blessed is he who comes in the name of the Lord, even the King of Israel." And Jesus found a young donkey and sat on it, just as it is written, "Fear not, daughter of Zion, behold, your king is coming, sitting on a donkey's colt." We'll just stop there. That, of course, was referencing what yesterday represents in the church, Palm Sunday. What I want to point out to you is, to me, one of the most compelling aspects of the story of Jesus is how the Bible in the Old Testament warned us that Jesus would come a certain way. He would be entering Jerusalem a certain way. But then that within 1 week, less than 7 days, the crowd that adored him, the crowd that laid down palm branches as a sign. See, they wanted somebody to take the king as in a political leader. They weren't looking for a Messiah to save their soul. So by the end of the week, they were calling for him to be crucified. That same crowd of thousands and thousands and thousands that were adoring him. And yet the Bible predicted that it would happen. It's one of the most remarkable parts of Scripture. 10 minutes after the hour. Just getting started here, Monday on the Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Sensei of Sensibility. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Oh my, Anthony Fauci out there taking credit now for the vaccine. That it was he that started the ball rolling, not the president. Oh, go back to being anonymous, sir. Go back. Let's see. It is March 29th, and to all of you that served our nation in Vietnam, thank you. It is National Vietnam War Veterans Day. It is not a national federal holiday. It is a day of remembrance. It is a day of memorial. It is a day to honor and say thank you. And so to all of you that served in Vietnam, a heartfelt thank you. It saddens me that we are still losing veterans due to their service in Vietnam. Not to natural causes, but service in Vietnam. And their names are not going to be added to the wall of memorial. That, to me, is one of the most moving monuments in all of the monuments across our country, but certainly in Washington, D.C., the Vietnam War Memorial. If you have never been to our nation's capital, just sit on a bench one day as people come from across the country to put their fingers, children who were babies, infants, putting their fingers on the name of their dad at the Vietnam War Memorial. It is singularly one of the most remarkable things I've ever witnessed. It saddens me that my brother, who served in Vietnam, who today would be in his 70s, will never have his name, though he died of Agent Orange-induced cancer. Every organ in his body had cancer in it when he passed away at 49. And Bill was a titan. And so, to all of you who served as my brother served, thank you. Just wanted to take a moment and remember on this day. So if you know of somebody at work that served, say thank you. See somebody wearing a hat, because there might be a few more hats out today. Vietnam War vets, not all of them, but many of them know today is a day of remembrance. President Trump put it in place. A day to honor their service. You might see a few more hats say thank you. On this date in 1848, an ice jam at the source of the Niagara River causes Niagara Falls to stop flowing for the first time in recorded history. How about that? Major Henry O'Neill Dehane Segrave becomes the first man to drive faster than 200 miles per hour on a course at Daytona Beach. How about that? 1927. And on this date in 1973, the U.S. troops depart South Vietnam, ending America's direct military involvement in the Vietnam War. Hence the date. 16 minutes after the hour. Get rolling here next. Brace yourselves. It's going to be a day here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
And free.
And iHeart's radio station.
Next hour, if you have ever wanted to get a better understanding of the scuttlebutt you've been hearing off and on for the last 6 years or so about a convention of states, we're going to try to settle all that in the first half hour of hour number two. John Malcolm will join us. He is the vice president of a division of the Heritage Foundation called the Institute for Constitutional Government. And he has written an exhaustive paper on the Convention of States. He is a constitutional scholar, and he has carved out time to join us to answer questions because there's things I just don't know. I am becoming more and more swayed that we need a Convention of States. We need to understand the risks because they do exist. But I'll explain later this hour why I'm being persuaded that we need it. That's coming up. Sal Nuzzo in the third hour. Federal court in D.C. This is under the category of there's hope. How much? That's up for you to decide. Federal judge ruled last week that D.C. Mayor Muriel Bowser's numerical and percentage cap restrictions on churches, according to federal judge Trevor McFadden, discriminates against houses of worship. Nominated by Trump in 2017 to the U.S. District Court for the District of Columbia, in his ruling he wrote, the district's order states that houses of worship may admit no more than the lesser of 25% of their capacity or 250 persons. Yet after the district's repeal of the same limit on food sellers, big box stores selling a range of essential and non-essential goods, those entities are subject to no maximum capacity limitations. In practical terms, this means that the archdiocese churches must stop admitting parishioners once they become a quarter full, but Whole Foods or Target can take in as many customers as they wish while complying with social distancing requirements. The district's approach to regulating houses of worship reflects a lack of adequate consideration for constitutional rights. The district would no doubt acknowledge that there is risk attendant in many activities it is classified as essential, such as picking up a bottle of wine or takeout from a local restaurant. I can't help but think that was dripping with sarcasm. But the district has permitted essential businesses to stay open, often with less onerous restrictions, because the public's need for those things apparently outweighs the risk. On the other hand, the district's restrictions have not recognized religious exercise as essential in the same way. These kinds of common sense founders' rulings are why many of us voted for Donald Trump. We voted for Donald Trump to try to stem the tide of the direction this country was going in its courts. Our friend on the program, the counsel, lead counsel and founder of Liberty Counsel, Matt Staver, said Judge Trevor McFadden clearly acknowledges that the First Amendment does not disappear because of coronavirus. Mayor Muriel Bowser has clearly discriminated against every church in D.C. while participating in mass gatherings of protesters with no limitations. This unequal treatment of churches is unconstitutional. We will continue to fight until religious freedom is totally restored. Good news. That is good news. Now, on the other side of the country, the California State Supreme Court has ruled unanimously that it is unconstitutional to hold people in jail simply because they can't afford bail. The ruling requires judges to assess community safety and a defendant's ability to pay when determining bail amounts. High bail requirements disproportionately impact poor communities of color. I'm just curious. Don't the high prices of homes discriminate against people that don't make as much money? The high cost of high-end sports cars, SUVs. They're SUVs that cost more than a house. Doesn't that discriminate against people that don't make as much money?
Here come the rioters and looters.
It's why people are fleeing states like that. I have stories here that are going to buttress this, so stick around. Big story in the press box, another juxtaposition between two states next on The Morning Show.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
...than a speeding bullet. More powerful than a locomotive. Able to leap tall buildings in a single bound.
It's The Morning Show with Preston Scott on WFLA.
Minutes after the hour. Another edition of Radio Gaga here on The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Grant Allen over there in Studio 1A. I'm here in Studio 1B. Day 4435 of the radio program, now in year 20 of the show. John Malcolm, Heritage Foundation, joins us next hour. The Convention of the States. We will discuss it ad nauseum. Well, the best we can. And give you an idea of what that's all about and whether the time has come. Again, I'm being nudged towards it every single day because of the actions of Congress. Not just Democrats, though. Republicans have contributed to my angst as well. Not nearly as much. Republicans don't always have the backbone they should have, and as a result, when they seek compromise, the pendulum swings further left. It never swings back to the right. It just doesn't. It happened by executive order. It happened through the stubbornness of President Donald Trump. I'm dumbfounded at the number of people that chose to support Biden over Trump because they didn't like Trump. It's intellectual stupidity to go that route. It is. Heart, I get it. I absolutely get it. You don't like the guy. But look at the collapse, the calamity, the disaster that's unfolding. Anyway, sorry. The tale of two states. Florida will not require COVID-19 vaccine passports. Ron DeSantis, no, 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 no. Not going to happen. The European Union has announced a digital green certificate will allow people to travel all across the European bloc as long as they prove they've been vaccinated. But if you believe Anthony Fauci, you wear a mask whether someone's vaccinated or not, so I guess it's not that much of a guarantee now, is it? Governor, to start going down the road of vaccine passports, I mean, you have some of these states saying to go to a sporting event, you have to either show a negative test or vaccine proof. I just think you get to make those decisions. If you want to go to an event, go to an event. If you don't, don't. But requiring people to provide all this proof is not how to get society back to normal. So we're rejecting any vaccine passports here in the state of Florida. However, as of April 2nd in New York, it's the Excelsior Pass. Governor Andrew Cuomo, is he still in charge? Who's listening to him? New Yorkers will be required to show vaccine passports. It will have a green check mark if the person's been vaccinated or tested negatively, or a red X if they haven't. There is no way that's constitutional.
Looks like I'm not going anywhere.
There's no way. There's no way that's constitutional. Those are the big stories in the press box. Und die Führer of New York. Und der Wunderweiter, Eingeheuer, Ex, Akin. 40 minutes after.
Known as Mr. Know-It-All. The Morning Show with Preston Scott. News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Forty-one minutes after the hour, Grant Allen over there, Studio 1A. I'm here, Studio 1B. That was really unfair of me to mock Andrew Cuomo that way. When actually, I do have tape of the announcement by Governor Cuomo.
Meine Arbeit für richtig hält's. Ob du glaubst, dass ich fleißig gewesen bin, dass ich gearbeitet habe, dass ich mich in diesen Jahren für dich eingesetzt habe. Dass ich anständig meine Zeit verwendet habe im Dienste meines Volkes. Gib du jetzt deine Stimme ab. Wenn ja, dann tritt für mich ein, so wie ich für dich eingetreten bin.
Yeah, and the New York Assembly just cheering wildly, even though they hate him.
I love that. That's so funny.
Yeah, what he just said there is New Yorkers have proven they can follow public health guidance to beat back COVID. Especially all those that went in the nursing homes, right, Governor? And the innovative Excelsior Pass. I mean, really?
Und die Excelsior Pass!
I mean, make it stop! Is another tool in our toolbox to fight the virus. Here, let me help you out here, okay? New Yorkers have proven they can follow health guidance to beat back COVID. The innovative Excelsior Pass is another tool in our new toolbox to fight the virus while allowing more sectors of the economy to reopen. And so there you go.
I laugh to keep from crying.
I'm here to help. We'll be sharing that throughout the morning, I'm sure. This is great. Add better than two-thirds of Minnesota to the list of counties seeking to join another state. Parts of Oregon want to join with Idaho. Parts of California want to form a separate state. Washington, I have no idea. But State Representative Jeremy Munson from Crystal Lake, Minnesota, has introduced a bill where nearly every single county west of the Twin Cities would become part of South Dakota. He said Minnesota becomes more politically polarized every year, and the metro politicians have shown us that rural Minnesotans are no longer represented by St. Paul, which, by the way, is the capital. It's time to leave. And so he drew up a map of what it would look like.
That's a big Dakota.
Pointing out the obvious split in Minnesota, and it's like a lot of places. The country's red, but the high population centers of America are increasingly illiberal. South Dakota Governor Kristi Noem simply retweeted his plan.
No kidding.
And wrote, "In South Dakota, we roll out the red carpet for people who love personal responsibility and freedom."
Uh-oh.
Oh, man. Could you imagine? Oh, it would have to be the South Dakota Twins, but that wouldn't work very well now, would it?
Hmm.
Anyway, yeah, people, we're heading in the wrong direction, everybody. But hey, Donald Trump wasn't a nice person. 46 minutes after the hour. Come back with more of the fruit of your vote if you voted for Joe Biden. Next on The Morning Show.
Morning Show with Preston Scott.
And I live in a van down by the river.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Just having a little fun here in the midst of the misery. It's The Morning Show with Preston Scott. Misery, of course, being that Republicans and Democrats seem incapable. Look, I'll be honest with you. There are just a handful of Republicans that have the credibility to say one blessed word about our growing national debt. Just a few. Not many. A few have been consistent and steady in their concerns. Some going back as far as George W. Bush. Because George W. Bush inherited a balanced budget. I don't know what the debt load was when George W. took over. But it's been a disaster ever since his final years. Now, I understand 9/11 changed some things. I get that. But what he did at the end of his second term in office is he greased the wheels and started the spending that Barack Obama wanted to do. He activated it. He started it. George W. I personally think he's a delightful guy. Never met him, but what I know of him and people that have met him, seems like a delightful guy that I would be fascinated to spend time with. But I could honestly say that about almost every president, that I would enjoy visiting with them and kind of picking their brain, whether they were Democrat or Republican. Of course, with Joe Biden, there's a little diminished return there, but that's a story for another day. But Republicans have contributed to the debt of this country as well. My single biggest criticism of Donald Trump was not addressing the national debt. The only year that I see an excuse for is his final year, COVID. The rest? Nope. It needed to be a topic. So when Republicans call on, you know, the Democrats and the president to deal with the growing debt, a lot of those voices ring hollow to me. Where you been? I understand right now you can't do anything about it. It's gonna, if they want to pass more spending, they're going to. I just wanted to point out Democrats right now are pushing for another $3 trillion spending plan. And this week, President Joe Biden's going to make the case. And he's going to talk about women in the workplace and how so many women have left the workplace. Well, some of that is because of Democrat states locking down and forcing women to leave the workplace to take care of their kids because their kids can't go to school. And women probably disproportionately are doing that. That's a decision that couples and parents make on their own. It's not a decision the government should make. It has no bearing. But they're pushing another $3 trillion. Here's my point. And this is my setup to the next half hour. This would be an example of why I believe a convention of states is necessary. Now, I'm not there yet. I still need to learn more. And I hope you put in the time and effort to learn more. I'm going to link to a report written by our next guest. It's 11 pages plus another 12 pages of sources on the Convention of States. I believe Congress is incapable of dealing with our economy and our debt. I think we have to make them. I think we have to give them an allowance, if you will. So that and more comes up next. Gather people around the radio that need to hear it. John Malcolm joins me on the morning show with Preston Scott. Minutes after the hour, it's hour number two of the morning show with Preston Scott. Good morning, I'm Preston. Grant Allen over there, Studio 1A. I am here in Studio 1B. Do not want to waste a moment of time. Joining us, the Vice President for the Institute of Constitutional Government, our friends at the Heritage Foundation, have brought a home run hitter to the plate. John Malcolm joins us. John, good morning. Welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing well. How are you?
Well, I'm doing great, but I will tell you that I have a lot of listeners that have a ton of questions about this notion of a convention of states. In my recollection, John, this really grew during Barack Obama's years as president, even though Republicans and Democrats both have combined to the woes that we face economically in our country. I think most would say policy-wise, there are grave concerns about the expansion of government under President Obama and now under President Biden. So let's back up for just a second. Where does the idea of a convention of states come from?
Well, it's in Article 5 of the Constitution. Article 5 of the Constitution is the article that talks about how to amend the Constitution. And it provides for two different ways to amend the Constitution. It says, and I'll read it directly, it says, the Congress, whenever two-thirds of both houses shall deem it necessary, shall propose amendments to this Constitution, so that's one way, or on the application of the legislatures of two-thirds of the several states. Then it says, shall call a convention for proposing amendments, which in either case shall be valid for all intents and purposes as part of the Constitution when it's ratified by three-fourths of the states. So you can either get Congress, and this is the way it's always been done, you can get Congress proposing an amendment by passing that amendment by a two-thirds vote in the House and Senate and sending it to the states, or the states can bypass Congress by having the legislatures of two-thirds of the states submit their own call for a convention of the states. So it's in the Constitution. It just has, and it's come very, very close to being invoked. But whenever in our nation's history it's come close to being invoked, Congress, reading the tea leaves and seeing how popular something is and fearing their reelection prospects, has always gone ahead then and proposed whatever amendment was coming close to passage and has sent it to the states for ratification.
John, is my analysis fair that this ramped up during the years of Barack Obama, then kind of died back a little bit under President Trump, and now seems to be gaining some, I guess, some steam yet again?
Well, certainly among conservatives, one of the things to talk about a convention of the states, which is one of the potential dangers of it, is that conservatives have their list of proposed constitutional amendments that they would like to do, and liberals have their proposed list of constitutional amendments that they would like to do. And as one would expect, during Democratic administration, the conservatives get a little bit more amped up at the thought of potentially calling a convention for the state. And during Republican administrations, liberals do the same. There's been a lot of pressure for a long time for a balanced budget amendment because everybody appears to think that spending's out of control, although we forget that when it comes to passing large bills. But on a whole host of other issues, yes. Conservatives certainly talked a lot about a convention of the states during the Obama administration. Had there been a Hillary Clinton administration, those voices would have been even raised even more. They've been kind of quiet for the last 4 years, but I expect they'll now, you know, surface just as they are now through our conversation during the Biden administration.
John Malcolm is with me with the Heritage Foundation. He's the vice president for the Institute of Constitutional Government. John, how big of a factor would it be moving forward that a majority of states are in fact controlled by Republicans?
Well, it has to be the state legislatures that propose these amendments. So, you know, yes, that would be a significant factor. One of the problems is the people who call for a convention of the states sometimes want to do it to consider a particular amendment, like, mm-hmm. say, a balanced budget amendment. And perhaps they're able to do it. There are lots of law review articles talking about how they have the ability to do that. But the language that I just read from Article 5 talks about states petitioning shall call a convention for proposing amendments. So there is some question about if, even if it was all conservative states that called for that convention, if it wasn't limited, then, you know, the media could come in, liberals could come in, and there would be pressure to perhaps put forward the amendment that led to the call for the convention in the first place, but also propose other amendments that conservatives might not like.
Yeah, I want to get to that next. John, stand by. We've got a quick check of weather and traffic. John Malcolm with us. We come back. I want to talk about the downfalls. There are a lot of proponents, a lot of them on talk radio, that are in support of a convention of states, but what are the dark sides of it?
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
When you thought you were right. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
The subject is deep and wide. We're going to do the best we can in the time we have with John Malcolm with the Heritage Foundation to look at the Convention of States. It is becoming a topic du jour once again with the Biden administration, with the large spending bills. And again, he wasn't alone on this. Donald Trump had some large spending bills, and it was my biggest concern with the Trump presidency is we never, ever address the national debt. We talked about it, but we didn't really address it. And there's a big difference. John, what are the unknown consequences, the unintended consequences that could befall us at a convention of states? You started to touch on that. Expand on it a little bit.
Sure. Well, look, I understand the motivation behind a convention of states, because they're going to say, you know, that Congress and the president are never going to reform themselves, and so they need to be limited from the outside. And some people are also very upset at rather expansive rulings that the Supreme Court has done, and only the Supreme Court can correct itself on constitutional matters unless the Constitution is amended. But, you know, so we've talked about one already with the balanced budget amendment. Mm-hmm. It depends on how it is framed. So, for instance, if you pass a balanced budget amendment that said broadly you have to have a balanced budget, well, the judges are going to get involved in interpreting that amendment. And, for instance, suppose they sit there and say, well, we don't consider this, a judge says, we don't consider this budget to be balanced, therefore we're going to balance it not by reducing spending, but by forcing tax increases. So, you know, be careful what you ask for. Mm-hmm. Sometimes you get it in a way in which you didn't expect it. Now, there are, again, if the convention could be limited to a proposal, this might not be a problem. But, you know, back in the original Constitutional Convention, you had all of our founding fathers got together in Constitution Hall in Philadelphia. They banned the media. They banned any outside conversation of what they were doing. And they had a robust debate that they kept inside the convention hall. That, of course, would never happen today. The news media would be all over a convention, and there would be all kinds of pressure to enact or propose amendments that, you know, a lot of conservatives might not like. So let's pick a few. I mean, obviously, you know, the left wants to do away with the Second Amendment. That would never get by two-thirds of the states, much less three-quarters, to ratify it. But what about things like eliminating the Electoral College, or overturning Citizens United, or amending the First Amendment to ban hate speech, or amending the Constitution to have anti-discrimination laws trump religious rights? These are all things that the left certainly wants to do that have, at least according to opinion polls, a fair amount of popular support. And you know, the concern would be that all of a sudden a convention would be captured by the left, and they would manage to cobble together two-thirds of the states to propose this and then three-quarters of the states to ratify it. Just since the numbers are – you need to be clear what the numbers are. Two-thirds of the states at the moment would be 34 states, and three-quarters of the states would be 38 states. That's what it would take to propose the amendment, and that's what it would take to ratify the amendment.
How are the delegations, if you will, to a convention of states selected?
Well, that's another matter that's somewhat up for grabs. It is, you know, it usually would be the state legislatures, but it's unclear whether Congress would have a role in that. It's unclear, for instance, whether or not states could punish their chosen representatives by saying things like, if you consider any amendment other than this one amendment that we called for, you're going to be fined, or you're going to be removed, or what have you. I mean, I tend to think the Article 5 Convention of the States process is supposed to really, really limit Congress's role. They're supposed to receive the calls for the convention. They're supposed to make sure that they match up, although that's an open question too. And then they are just supposed to call the convention. And then whatever the convention returns gets immediately sent to the states for ratification. But since this process has never been used before, and we have, you know, several activist congressmen and activist judges, it's a little unclear how it would all play out in practice.
John Malcolm with us for one more segment. He's with the Heritage Foundation and my guest on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
Dude, yes!
And iHeart's radio station.
Tweet 21 minutes after the hour, final few moments with John Malcolm with the Heritage Foundation. He's vice president for the Institute for Constitutional Government. And trying to talk through the Convention of States, we've talked through quite a bit. And again, this is a snapshot. I'm going to post a link on my blog page to a report that he wrote back in February of 2016. It's got almost as many, if not more, pages of sources than the actual report itself. John Malcolm with us. John, let me hearken back to something. When Donald Trump rolled out the Make America Great Again, the question was asked, when was America ever great? And my answer, I don't feel like we ever really answered that. My answer was, America was never perfect, but America was great when it could solve problems. And to me, the genius of the founders and the framers of our Constitution is found in not that they did everything perfectly, but that they created an environment where problems could be solved. So with that said, do you feel like, given what you have observed in your tenure at Heritage and as an observer of the Constitution and how it plays out in our government, are we about at a place where something like this might seriously have to be considered?
Well, I think America is great for all sorts of reasons. In addition to the fact that we are founded on an idea and not ruled by a monarchy or hereditary kings or dictators. And there's always always promise for America, but you're right, we are not perfect. But look, there's a lot that's not great. I mean, there's a lot of Supreme Court opinions that have sort of stretched the bounds of the Constitution in ways in which the framers wouldn't recognize it. Congress appears to be incapable of sort of controlling itself when it comes to spending, and has largely, by the way, when it comes to making law, ceded the field to all of these administrative agencies that aren't in any way, shape, or form accountable to the people. And that's where a lot of law gets made, including by some activist judges who would like to continue to stretch the bounds of the Constitution. The beauty of a Convention of the States proposal is it bubbles up from the people. It's designed to bypass, if you will, the architects of this problem, that's Congress and the president, and also the courts. But getting people to agree on an amendment and getting through the 2/3 of the states and the 3/4 for ratification without having the system hijacked in some way is a very difficult task. I mean, the people who proposed the Convention of the States have been at it for years to try to get signatures done. Most of them called for a particular amendment, and they had to get the call together within 7 years. That time has all passed. But this talk will continue, and depending on what Congress does and how aggressive President Biden is and what the courts do, there's always the possibility that a convention of the states could happen, or that when they get close to the 2/3 needed to call for the convention, Congress will have a wake-up call and, physician, heal thyself, and will begin to amend its ways. But we'll have to see.
John, last question. Take off your analyst hat as someone that studies the U.S. Constitution and reports on its nuances, large and small. As a citizen, what do you think would be that trigger or that point where, as a citizen, you think this might be the Hail Mary that's the only option left on the field?
Well, that's really hard to say. Everyone will have their trigger. So on the left, obviously, if the Supreme Court overruled Roe versus Wade, I suppose if the Supreme Court, which it's not going to do in the near future, were to completely invalidate the Second Amendment by overruling the Heller decision, and that's what the Democrats pledged that they wanted to do. And Justice John Paul Stevens, when he retired from the bench, wrote a book about the amendments he would do if he were king, and one of them was to abolish the Second Amendment. But there are any number of things that will get people riled up, and you'll never know what's going to catch fire.
Wouldn't that be then, that would be perhaps, I've argued that the Second Amendment makes the rest of them possible.
Look, I agree with that. It's in the Bill of Rights for a reason, and people who somehow want to say, you need to have strict scrutiny or some compelling reason to overrule any gun control legislation. Well, they certainly wouldn't argue that if the government were passing laws restricting their ability to engage in freedom of association or freedom of speech. They wouldn't sit there and say, well, the government, can the people have to show a really compelling reason to overrule whatever restrictions were imposed on their ability to speak freely.
If I were to ask you in the next 10 years, would there be an actual effort to create a convention of states, what would you place those odds at?
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Well, I 100%, because there's always an ongoing effort to create a convention of the states. There are calls for conventions that are pending before Congress. They just haven't reached the magic number of 34 states all calling for a convention on the same issue. So I would put the odds significantly lower of actually getting a convention called, but that effort is going to be a steady drumbeat and has been for some time.
John, thank you for the time this morning. I appreciate it very much.
Great to be with you.
Thank you, sir. John Malcolm with the Heritage Foundation.
Someone has to say it. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Minutes after the hour. It's Monday on the Morning Show with Preston Scott. Hello, everybody. Good morning and welcome. Grant Allen over there running the program, keeping us on the rails best he can. There's some things he simply can't control. More on that in just a moment. The big stories in the press box. Florida's governor says there will not be vaccine passports inside of Florida. I just want to make it very clear, in Florida, we're not doing any vaccine passports. Experts said that was a bad idea. I think it's a bad idea, so that will not happen. So folks should get vaccinated if they want to. We'll obviously provide that, but under no circumstances will the state be asking you to show proof of vaccination. And I don't think private companies should be doing that either. I don't think private companies should be doing that. It's up to a private company. Then there's New York. They will begin on this week, the 2nd of April, otherwise known as Friday, begin the launch of the Excelsior Pass. It sounds like a movie, the Excelsior Pass. Or it sounds like another group of cannibals stuck in the mountains. They tried to make their way to California, only to be stuck in Excelsior Pass. But nay, nay, similar to a mobile airline boarding pass, individuals will be able to either get a printout or their smartphone will reveal the Excelsior Pass wallet app. Each pass will have a secure QR code. Participating businesses and venues can scan using a companion app to verify proof of COVID-19 negative tests or proof of vaccination. It says an individual's data is kept secure and confidential at all times.
Right.
Sure, yeah. It is.
I'm looking at the FBI agent staring at me in my phone right now.
Now, for those of you that might be thinking, come on, there's no way. Look, we've got Andrew Cuomo. At least it's been, this may be Andrew Cuomo making the announcement himself.
Arbeit für Richtigkeit
New Yorkers have proven they can follow public health guidance to beat back COVID, and the innovative Excelsior Pass is another tool in our new toolbox to fight the virus while allowing more sectors of the economy to reopen safely and keeping personal information secure. Yeah, there you go. That was to the New York Assembly, or maybe it was just a crowd of illiberals. I don't know. That may not be Andrew Cuomo. That's what it's purported to be. I'm just saying. It could be. Sounds a lot like Hitler to me. I'm just saying. And in March last year, I said, what's coming? We're going to have to prove that you've been vaccinated, that you've had the virus in order to do X, Y, or Z. Yep. Re-enter society in New York.
You were, like, if you had that perspective, you were a conspiracy theorist. Now it's here.
Illiberals, it's not a conspiracy. It's illiberals are predictable. That's all it is. There's nothing magical about my analytical skills or yours. It's that illiberals are predictable. But just think of the irony. The group of people demanding this kind of clearance to enter a store don't believe in voter ID.
That's genius.
40 minutes after the hour, it's the morning show with Preston Scott.
The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Shazam.
News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
It's The Morning Show. Dr. Joe Camp's normally scheduled to join us at this time. He might get in here in a final couple moments, but he may be in surgery. Something could have come up. That's what happens when you work with a surgeon. Stuff happens. But you talk about being grateful for where you live. And again, for all of you transplants, I was once a transplant. Although I started living in Florida part-time when I was a child. We had a home in New Smyrna Beach. But I wouldn't consider myself a resident of Florida, because that was strictly part-time until 1987. 87, I moved to Florida. At that point, Florida became my home. Didn't know it'd be my home moving forward, but it has become my home. I'm a Floridian. Not a native Floridian, but I'm a Floridian. To all of you listening, inside the boundaries of the Sunshine State. I'll go ahead and extend it, even up to the Peach State. If you are moving here from a liberal state and you have liberal inclinations, if you're liberal, there's hope. If you're illiberal, I'm sorry. You probably should move to another state. Seriously, just, you won't like it here. Because Florida is represented by more conservative values, and we will fight very hard to keep them that way. Because honestly, Republican-run states right now are the only restraint the federal government has. That's it. Period. Now, I think we're real close to having 34 states. But I'm not sure. I'm not sure if we're actually there. We're going to get right to Dr. Joe Camps, who joins us for a couple minutes here. Hey, Joe.
Well, I wish I had some energy for the Seminoles last night. We certainly looked a little listless to me, but I'm certain the kids were very tired, very proud of them for what they accomplished this year. But, boy.
They'll be better next year.
Yes. Real quick, I happened to be doing a little research, and you know, as a urologist, one of the common things we deal with are urinary tract infections, obviously, and it's very common, particularly in women. But there's a recent study that just showed that 50% of women are given either the wrong antibiotic or the sequence and of time to take the antibiotics is a bit off. Sometimes they take them too long. And, you know, I think we've become accustomed to just popping the pills and hoping we feel better. But the take-home message this morning is that if you think you have a urinary tract infection, you need to insist on asking the doctors to culture the urine, because 50% of people are actually prescribed the wrong medication, and then you have to change it. So not only are you adding cost, but you might be taking the wrong thing. And, you know, we're trying to promote optimal treatment and coverage. And you know, we get so accustomed to, you know, taking these medications, but we must remember that there are adverse events, that it upsets the biome of the gut, and that means that, you know, the organisms that are normal in our bodies are disrupted. And certainly some antibiotics have developed a resistance. We're now in about the third generation, and they're currently working on the next generation of antibiotics, because we have so many that basically are not useful anymore. So the message is, if you think you have an infection, you go see your provider, ask for a urine culture, try and wait 3 days. You can drink more water or take an over-the-counter medication like Peridium to soothe your symptoms until you find out exactly what you need. So I've always had a hunch that this is overprescribing occurs, and mm-hmm. this certainly substantiated my claim. So as a responsible person that's receiving the care and paying for it, make sure you're appropriately taking the medications and on the right thing so that it can take care of your issue. So real quick snapshot on that this morning, Preston. I'm sorry I was a minute off there, but things are going well.
Good, my friend. Thanks for the time today.
Oh, okay, Preston. Thank you.
Dr. Joe Camp's with us on The Morning Show.
Hollywood is under siege, covertly compromised by a global adversary. The same Hollywood that sold the American dream to the world is now making nightmares a reality. The American way of life is being censored by the Chinese Communist Party. Some films have scenes completely altered. Other films have lost their funding or been canceled altogether. Some actors have been banned from China for supporting human rights. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in exposing how the film industry gradually lost its integrity on its path to profits. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Back program. It's time to act like Spock. Stop feeling and just use reason.
9 to noon on WFLA.
Sal Nuzzo, just a few minutes, our legislative update, lots to talk about, but let me just get through some headlines here, some stories. Be careful what you wish for and then do. L.A. County cut their budget for law enforcement because of the pressure by the defund the police movement, BLM, all that nonsense based on all those lies. And if you're wondering, why do you always say that? Because I'm trying to tweak them. I'm trying to nudge them. I'm trying to nudge supporters of Black Lives Matter with the simple fact that it's based on a lie. Mom and Dad always used to tell us it doesn't take much poison to ruin a meal. When you build a movement on the lie, it's a bad movement. The idea of, hey, let's do everything possible to make sure police act responsibly with the remarkable authority that they carry, I'm 100% with you. But let's not turn it into something it's not. And that's what's happened. And so, L.A. County, violent 2020, 350 homicides, 36% higher. January of this year, 39 homicides, a 34% increase over the previous year, which was an increase over the previous year. So the numbers keep going up. So what do? They put more money back in the budget. They're quietly starting to refund the police. Mm-hmm. Mike Braun, Republican senator from Indiana, Ted Cruz, among others, told by Biden officials, do not take photos at the camps, the migrant camps where illegals are. Braun said that he was, in fact, flat out told to delete photos. There was one Biden representative. I felt sorry for the lady because she actually talked to me about deleting a picture, but by the time she got to me, all those pictures were taken. And that shows you the hypocrisy. None of us would have gone down there if we were going to be muzzled. Ted Cruz, in fact, was told by someone, this is how they're working. Listen to this exchange. Please give dignity to the people. Please give dignity to the people. Please respect the people, the rules. Blocking his camera with her face. So you work for the commissioner. You're a senior advisor. You were hired 2 weeks ago, and you're instructed to ask us not to have any pictures taken here because the political leadership at DHS does not want the American people to know it. Please don't treat the people as such. Your policies are unfortunately trying to hide them. I understand that you are instructed. I respect them. I want to fix this situation. And the administration that you worked for is responsible for these conditions. By the way, this is a tidy little tidbit being left out of the mainstream media reports, largely. There are 18,000. Let me say that again. There are 18,000 unaccompanied minors at either Border Protection or Health and Human Services custody. 18,000. All of this is the fault of Joe Biden. The members of the U.S. Senate said the human traffickers, the smugglers, the coyotes, we're across the way jeering them, saying, we're coming, you can't stop us. Time for news, hour three next. Talking Sharks here with Sal Nuzzo, and no, not politics. As we enter hour number three, literally turning the page on the rundown, Sal with the James Madison Institute, as we look at what's going on in the Florida legislative session. Just quickly, you hook a great hammerhead this week.
Yeah, it was a good fight. Brought it.
How long did it take you to get him short?
It wasn't that long. Got him off the sandbar at Dog Island and brought him in. Got the hook out and got him back swimming. So he can.
Is that your first hammerhead?
Yeah, it was a nice one.
Trophy moment.
Yeah, it was.
How
it was
long
fun.
Was he?
I think it was about five and a half feet, something like that. Yeah.
I've joked that if I caught a fish that big on a rod and reel, I would have the fishing equivalent of buck fever. And I would take my rod and reel and just throw it off the boat. Just throw it right off the boat. I'd panic. Just chuck it. I would chuck it.
Absolutely.
The problem is you do all that work and then you got to let it go. You know, it wasn't a red or something that you could eat. So
you said you removed the hook.
Yeah.
Nah, just cut the line, man.
No. Gotta be a good human being.
Yeah, I choose to keep my hands and be a good human being.
Yeah, he wasn't that bad.
Whatever. Cut the line, pal. All right, the governor.
Yeah, the governor announced that protocols for vaccine down to 40 and up, and it'll go to 18 and up, I believe, on the 1st or 2nd, so later on this week. Anybody who is an adult who wants to get a vaccine can make an appointment, and so you could go and get your shots. Have not heard anything out of the governor's office on the gambling discussions for a deal there, although I believe late last week the Senate did put out some stuff on what a gambling proposal might look like, and they're talking about $1 billion in revenue for the state related to gaming. So that could be something that gets some eyes.
JMI's position on gambling in general.
Do not take one.
Okay. As it relates to circle back to COVID real quickly, the big story in the press box, New York is going to a COVID vaccine pass. You got to show to get to certain things. The governor's made it clear that at least as far as he's concerned, there will be no such thing in Florida.
Good for the governor. Yeah, it's one of those ones where I'm probably in your camp and in the camp of folks that I travel with that are like, look, there should be no pressure one way or another to get a vaccine either way.
Right.
It is a personal choice. You should not have any kind of, you know, just the same as we do the flu shot. It is a personal choice. And I recognize before folks start sending emails that COVID is worse than the flu, but it is a similar type of viral infection. It just happens to have more mortality associated with it if you have comorbidity. So it's a personal choice, and one I'm glad that the governor's kind of putting his foot down on that one.
You have mentioned that the budget cycle this year in the session is more complicated than normal. Why?
Well, you've got a series of things that are coming at lawmakers from different angles that are all going to impact the budget. So you've got the pandemic and its impact on revenue. So you're going to have some clawbacks from this fiscal year that the governor's asking the agencies to identify up to 6% of their existing revenues that they can claw back and use for other for the next fiscal cycle. You've got injections of federal funds from the COVID relief bill, which in some cases have strings attached to them. So you've got lawmakers that as they discern what they're going to use COVID relief funding on, there are things that they can and can't do with that, or they risk litigation from the feds. Then you've got your typical budget battles. You've got a host of differences between what the Senate and what the House are concentrating on. So a couple of the committees on the appropriation side, particularly in the Senate, are having some what are now becoming public kind of spats in terms of what's going into a budget presentation versus what is going through a policy process and things along those lines.
Bottom line is they have to arrive at a balanced budget before this thing ends.
Yep, they do. And they're talking about some substantial cuts. With that being said, I believe the two numbers are $95 and $97 billion, 95 from the House, 97 from the Senate.
Sal Nuzzo with me. We're going to pick up right there. Come back in 70 seconds after a check of weather and traffic on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Spin stops here. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Still talking fishing here off air with Sal Nuzzo of the James Madison Institute. All right, this House and the Senate, what's going on?
So do you want to talk policy or do you want to talk budget? Because they're very different kind of
angles. Let's start where we were. Let's start budget and go policy.
So what we're beginning to see is you typically have kind of dynamics in terms of the back and forth between the House and the Senate on appropriations. What is a priority of the House? What is a priority of the Senate? Now, unlike prior sessions where it would typically be kind of the House Speaker's got his or her priorities and the Senate President has his or her I think what's beginning to emerge is this dynamic of the old guard versus the new guard. And so we're seeing it kind of bubble up in particular in the Senate last week because, you, as I've mentioned in prior segments and when I've been on, you've got a number of House members that have been elected into the Senate.
So are they old guard or are they new guard?
They're new.
They were in the House for a while, so that could make them old guard in some respects.
Sure, and they're relatively new guard for the Senate. And so you've got some folks that have been around for quite a while in the Senate that are approaching their last term or are on their last term, and they're kind of going about budgeting from the traditional ways in which the budget allocation process works. And so you had this instance in the criminal, one of the criminal justice appropriations committees in the Senate, where they were going to close or propose closing four state-run prisons, saving about $140 million from the Department of Corrections. That came in the budget process, and the secretary of the Department of Corrections was on record as saying that wasn't something that he wanted. It had come from really nobody knows at this point, but everybody knows. It probably came from leadership. And so you had both the chair of one of the committees on the criminal justice side, Jason Pizzo. You have Jeff Brandis, who's talked a lot about criminal justice reform, saying, whoa, wait a minute. We haven't vetted any of this either through DOC or through the normal policy process. And so when stuff like that kind of pops up publicly in a committee meeting, it signals some differentials or differences between leadership and some of the folks even within their own party. And so the two folks that I'm going to be paying a whole lot of attention to this week and into next, because we kind of call it the moving weeks when policy needs to start moving or it's going to kind of languish and die. Kelly Stargell, who is the appropriations chair in the Senate, we're going to see a little bit more about what her posture is on the budget as it kind of meanders through. And then Kathleen Passidomo, who's the Senate rules chair, but she's in line to be Senate president after Wilton Simpson. And so those two folks, I'm going to be very interested to see how they look at the budget process on the Senate side and kind of whether or not the differences between kind of the folks like Jeff Brandis and maybe Wilton Simpson or something along those lines, do they continue or do they work out deals? Because the other part of this is it actually pertains to policy decisions that would kind of be with respect to bills that are moving through the process. So as an example, you have HB1, the anti-riot bill. It is passed the House. It is stalled in the Senate because the first committee stop is the Criminal Justice Committee. It's chaired by Jason Pizzo, and he does not like the bill, or at least that seems to be the case. So the question then becomes, do they take the normal process and determine, okay, if it's not going to get a committee hearing, the bill is ultimately dead unless it gets a two-thirds vote to change the rules, or is there some kind of deal that gets worked that allows either that bill or others to kind of move through the process because they are a presiding officer priority.
How often does it happen that a bill passes one body and dies in the other?
Often. Every session that happens. It's just a question of if it passes one committee in the other chamber from the one that it passes, the full chamber can take up that bill and vote through the other chamber's version of it. But if it doesn't pass one committee, it's dead.
Interesting. All right, we're going to pick up there. Sal Nuzzo with me, another segment here in the Morning Show.
UFLA on your phone with the iHeartRadio app and on hundreds of devices like Alexa, Google Home, Xbox, and Sonos.
Hey, so here we go.
An iHeart's radio station.
Minutes after the hour, it is hour number three, day one of the week. We're going to polish off March this week and head to April, and we'll be here with you. April Fool's Day, be no different than any other day. I'll be the same idiot I am each and every other day. So there'll be nothing new happening. No April Fool's jokes. We're not going there. Never have, never will. I don't pinch people that aren't wearing green, and I don't do April Fool's jokes.
Good for you.
You ever into any of that
no,
stuff?
No. Yeah. No, I'm lame.
Well, we got a legislative session. That's enough to deal
with.
And one thing that has passed and is heading to the governor is COVID liability.
Yep. So the COVID.
Is this a win?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think this is a win for the business community. It's a win for Floridians. It's a win for the governor. Both Senate presiding officers had wanted something to pass, and it looked like they'd reached a deal where the House took the Senate's language after the Senate had combined their two proposals, passed it last week, and it's on to the governor's office where he will absolutely sign it.
The win for the state of Florida is that we're going to, in essence, indemnify businesses from something as nebulous as claims on viruses.
Yeah, absolutely. And of all of the things that the state of Florida does right, our litigation environment is not one of them. It's in the bottom.
Yeah, we're one of the worst.
Yeah, we're one of the worst. And so I think the Florida Chamber in the past has quantified the tax that, you know, people pay on lawsuit abuse, and it's in the, you know, the thousands, you know, per family. And so this is something that will keep that from increasing in the future, because as many of your listeners know, businesses don't pay taxes. They pass it on to consumers. And so this is something that would have been passed on to consumers.
Over the years, when I've mentioned that I think it's unfair that online retailers catch a break over brick and mortar's dealing with enough challenges. They don't need an unlevel playing field. Have we addressed that?
Yeah, well, it looks like we are addressing it. It hasn't gone to the governor's desk yet. The Senate did pass its online sales tax parity bill last week by a 30-10 vote. The 10 were more some concerns about the revenue neutrality piece, because they're going to take the $1 billion that comes in and they're going to replenish the unemployment insurance trust fund. That will only take about 3 years to do each year. And so after that, there's some concerns about, you know, can they, you know, would it then be a tax hike? And so, but it has passed the Senate. The House takes up HB 15, I believe it is, that will kind of move through the Commerce Committee today. And then the House can take up the Senate's version or pass its own, and then they reconcile them.
I mean, 30-10 seems like it's pretty widely supported.
Oh, it's a bipartisan bill. Yeah, it is. And there's some concern about the fact that individuals are now paying a sales tax, and then companies, because of the unemployment insurance trust fund, are getting a tax break in a sense. And that's kind of the logic. But as I just mentioned a little bit ago, corporations don't pay the taxes. They just pass it on to consumers anyway. So it's a kind of a moot point.
School choice.
Yeah, school choice. The Senate had been moving a big consolidation package and expansion of all of the school choice programs from, I believe it was 5 or 6, into 2. And so the House had not even filed a bill on that, which was odd, because the House had typically been the body that kind of advanced school choice in prior years.
Yep.
They were just being deliberate. They took up a lot of what the Senate had. They unveiled a what's called a PCB, a proposed committee bill. It is a little bit different from the Senate. They do keep the tax credit scholarship program separate and apart. I'm trying to figure out why. I've heard some things about kind of the logic behind that. But one of the reasons that the Senate took it on and brought it under the general revenue portion of the budget was because you had this instance last year where companies were kind of being shamed by the woke left crowd, because a handful of those schools that were receiving scholarship money were religious schools and you know, the whole bit there. And so I was thinking that was a great end around in terms of, you know, you eliminate the argument altogether. It's now all, you know, part of the state program. And but the House is thinking a little bit differently. More than likely, they're going to kind of move deliberately, negotiate, and come at a very good compromise. And the guy who runs our Education Policy Center, Bill Maddox, has been kind of working on that.
What do you think the big story will be a week from now when we meet again?
One of the things that I think is something that we need to take a really big look at. Last week, Chair Blazing Golia had the first committee stop for the election integrity bill in the House. It strengthens Florida's position. And so I think that may be a dark horse for things that are going to pop up that when we come back next week, we're going to want to pay a lot of attention to. On the heels of the bill that Georgia passed,
yeah,
I think a number of states are tackling this. It's definitely something something JMI has been looking at and will continue to look at. And I'm hopeful that we'll continue to move in the correct direction.
Thanks for the time.
Always a pleasure.
Sal Nuzzo with the James Madison Institute, where he serves as vice president of policy, but more importantly, my guest on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster films in the last decade, then chances are that what you watched has been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. Film scenes get completely altered. Films get canceled or lose funding. Actors supporting human rights are banned. Hollywood Takeover is a documentary brought to you by the Epoch Times, revealing how the CCP has infiltrated major movie studios. Join Chris Fenton, a former Hollywood executive, and Tiffany Meyer, an investigative news reporter, through their journey in uncovering the impact of this campaign on our society and highlighting the brave souls fighting back and turning the tide. Don't miss the most important documentary ever made about Hollywood. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes, available for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free. That's HollywoodTakeover.com/free.
With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here.
We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Morning Show with Preston Scott.
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
On News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Big story in the press box. Then we'll get to an unfortunate mistake that Florida State is making. I hate it. I hate to be talking about this stuff. I've probably had a dozen emails on this in the last 3 days. I'll get to that in just a minute. Big story in the press box, something we touched on with Sal Nuzzo just a few minutes ago with JMI about a half hour ago when we started, was the governor of Florida will not, under any circumstances, entertain any kind of digital green certificate for vaccines, a pass, card, identification card. New York is doing that. I've joked about it all morning long. Andrew Cuomo sounding like Adolf Hitler. But the meat of it is pretty scary. It's called the Excelsior Pass Wallet App. And the press release says each pass will have a secure... This is the press release from the state of New York. Each pass will have a secure QR code. Participating businesses and venues can scan it using a companion app to verify proof of COVID-19 negative test results or proof of vaccination. An individual's data is kept secure and confidential at all times. Now, first, that's laughable. We know that. The Pentagon is hacked routinely. So here's the question. Are you willing to be part of a culture, a society in New York, that you have to show somebody your personal medical information that shows either a green check mark, meaning you may enter, or an X, meaning you may not? You willing to participate in that to re-enter society? What's next? Do you realize how absolutely off the scale this is? There are some listening to my explanation of this right now that are like, yeah, what's wrong with that? Check yourself. Because you have already gone down the path where mentally you've surrendered your rights.
We already have.
Well, some have.
Well, the First Amendment right to assemble, even in the most red of states, we weren't allowed to do that here in Florida back when COVID hit. And that's just, you know, that's just kind of my thought. States like Texas and Florida, you weren't allowed to gather when COVID hit. That's not good.
I understand the idea of, okay, wait a minute, what are we dealing with here? Thankfully, we were in a state that said, yeah, no. To the extent that I want, no. No, we didn't push back as far, as fast as I would have liked, but I will accept Governor DeSantis's prudence in moving forward the way he did, given the alternatives. I'm grateful that, let me put it this way. Who would you have rather had, if you're a business owner listening to me right now, who would you rather have had as governor during this last year? Ron DeSantis or Andrew Gillum? Your businesses would be, some of them, closed right now. You'd be out of business under Andrew Gillum. We come back, FSU's latest mistake in judgment, and it's bad. I hate to be the bearer, but I'm going to do it next on The Morning Show with Preston Scott.
Dick and weather on the 10s, and the truth all the time. The Morning Show with Preston Scott on News Radio 100.7 WFLA.
Morning Show with Preston Scott, and this is one of those, I hope you appreciate, I hate this, because I love Florida State University. I do. So many people, so many professors and employees and coaches that I know and some love and respect so very much. But it is because of that that I'm going to talk about it. A class being offered by a Dr. Megan Martinez for the Summer C schedule is entitled "The History of Karen Weaponizing White Womanhood."
The fact that there's enough data on that is unbelievable. Because the Karen is a new phenomena. A couple years old, I think.
The flyer promoting it has a quote from New York Times columnist Charles Blow. "The activation of white terror is a white woman's soft power. We like to masculinize white supremacy. To presume it reeks of testosterone when, in fact, it's just as likely to be spritzed by perfume." In the syllabus, required reading includes "Hood Feminism" by Mickey Kendall, "Too Fat, Too Slutty, Too Loud, The Rise and Reign of the Unruly Woman" by Anne Helen Peterson, and "Eloquent Rage, A Black Feminist Discovers Her Superpower" by Brittany Cooper. That's required reading. And so I fired off a series of questions to FSU President John Thrasher in response to this, and I'm awaiting answers. In fairness, the questions were sent yesterday, and so I'll give him a few days to get my questions and respond with an official on-the-record response. But to paraphrase one of my questions, you know, I'm asking, were you aware of this course? Who approves this type of course, or do the academics have the freedom to create whatever course they want and offer it as they see fit? In other words, I'm asking about the mechanism of course selection. Do you think it's appropriate for taxpayers to fund and support this type of class offering at a public university? I do not. See, I am of the opinion that opinionated classes should never be offered in a public university. Go to a private school. If you want that type of stuff, go to a private school that focuses on, in this case, this woman's obsession with her own hatred, her own bigotry, her own racism, her own issues. She clearly has issues. But that your tax dollars, and with all apologies, as my commentary suggested to any woman out there named Karen, talk about unfortunate. But if you are a white female in Florida, your tax dollars are supporting this. But taxpayer money is being used to support this, and I think it's fair to ask why. And I ended my questioning by asking this. Would such a course, demeaning, divisively defaming blacks, Asians, Muslims, be tolerated? The answer is absolutely no, it would not. And anyone that thinks otherwise, you're fooling yourself. This is patently shameful. I think FSU, I think Dr. Martinez should be ashamed that this course is offered at a public university, fanning the flames of divisiveness at taxpayer expense. 46 minutes after the hour. Monday's already in the books. Where'd the time go? Got this from a listener. I'm just going to read it. I took down my rebel flag, which you can't buy on eBay anymore. Peeled the National Rifle Association sticker off my front window. Disconnected my home alarm system and quit the candy bleep neighborhood watch. I bought two Pakistani flags. Put one at each corner of the front yard. Then I purchased the black flag of ISIS, which you can buy on eBay, and ran it up the flagpole. Now the local police, sheriff, FBI, CIA, NSA, Homeland Security, Secret Service, and other agencies are all watching my house 24/7. I've never felt safer. And I'm saving $69.95 a month that I used to be charged by the security company. Plus, I bought burkas for me to wear when I shop or travel. Everyone moves out of the way and security can't pat me down. They say I'm a male wearing a burka. I just say I'm feeling like a woman today.
Is that how we ended it?
Yep.
Oh, my stars.
Hot bleep. Safe at last.
Well, that's one way to make you feel safe.
Thanks for the email. Always remember, if you want to email me, it's Preston@iHeartRadio.com.
Brought to you by Barino Heating and Air. It's the Morning Show 180 on WFLA.
Today on the radio program, Joe Biden wants to spend another multiple trillion dollars, this time $3 trillion. We have a crisis right now that needs to be addressed by throwing cash at it. That led to a discussion with John Malcolm from the Heritage Foundation on the Convention of the States. I thought it was a pretty good pluses and minuses overview of the dangers and the benefits of a Convention of the States, plus the remarkable hurdles that would be required to get there. If you don't understand what in the world I'm talking about, there you go. Because it may come to that. It may come to a Hail Mary. A convention of the states would be a Hail Mary to stop Congress from doing X, Y, Z, and maybe all of the above. We talked about the COVID differences between two states. If you're a senior adult, you lucked out living in Florida. Because in New York, you may have had a death sentence handed to you by the governor. In Florida, you were protected. In New York, they're going to make citizens take part in something called the Excelsior Pass if they want to attend certain functions and re-enter society. The governor of Florida has said we're not going to have any kind of vaccine card. Not while I'm governor. That, by the way, is an important note. While I'm governor, Ron DeSantis will not always be governor of Florida. And now that the liberals have seen a blueprint for how to derail the country, don't think for a second this is the last time we're going to deal with something like COVID-19. It's going to happen again. Hour three, Sal Nuzzo joined us from the James Madison Institute talking about the legislative session. It is must-listen radio. If you missed it, get the podcast. Doesn't matter where you live in the Sunshine State. You need to know what's going on inside the legislative session because it impacts you. And we touched on a ton of things in our three segments on that subject. Florida State University, bad mistake in judgment if they allow this class to continue this summer. Tomorrow, Seth Yon, former member of U.S. Soccer Federation, joins us for five segments.
You are being influenced. If you've watched any blockbuster film in the last decade, then chances are that it's been influenced by the Chinese Communist Party. Here's the reality. The CCP is running the largest influence campaign in history. In Hollywood Takeover, brought to you by the Epoch Times, investigative reporter Tiffany Meyer reveals how the CCP has infiltrated major studios. For a limited time, watch the first 10 minutes for free on HollywoodTakeover.com/free.